It's Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. Wisconsin is shaping up to be a focal point in this year's presidential race. Republican incumbent Donald Trump was in Kenosha yesterday. Tomorrow, Democratic challenger Joe Biden will visit the city. It's been rocked by the police shooting of Jacob Blake, subsequent protests, violence, and damage. It's the Week in Washington, where we catch up on some of the week's top stories in national politics, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you were in Kenosha yesterday, did you go out to see President Trump during his visit? What motivated you? What did you see? How did it make you feel? Maybe you weren't there for President Trump, and instead you were there to protest police violence. Do you welcome the attention Wisconsin is receiving as the presidential campaign heats up? Call 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Scott Wong. He's senior staff writer at The Hill covering the House of Representatives leadership. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you.
We'll get to a lot with Trump and Biden's Kenosha visits and the race going forward. First, though, let's talk about Steve Mnuchin. The Treasury Secretary was on Capitol Hill yesterday testifying about coronavirus economic relief. For weeks, things have been at a standstill as far as negotiations. What should we know about what's happened this week?
Well, he appeared on Capitol Hill before the special House committee that's investigating the federal response to the coronavirus crisis. And he was a Treasury Secretary who appeared very eager to cut a deal, eager to get back to the negotiating table with Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And he said both he and Trump believe that more aid is needed. He talked about common agreement where he agrees with the Democrats on funding for schools, testing, a return to this expanded unemployment insurance, more money for small businesses. But it looks like the big hangup right now is additional aid for states, cities, and counties, which have taken a huge hit, as you know, because of falling tax revenue. So Mnuchin and Pelosi did speak last night for about 35 minutes, but Pelosi said there was no broad consensus, and so things are still at a standstill. The Senate, however, will be moving forward with what we call a skinny, pared-down stimulus package, about $500 billion. But it looks like Senate Democrats led by Chuck Schumer may filibuster that, which leaves us back at square one.
Okay, so some movement, but not a whole lot of progress. We've seen the administration with a few moves of its own outside financial relief legislation. One is President Trump's so-called payroll tax holiday that kicked off yesterday. How does that affect the conversations in Washington?
Well, in the absence of a big, broad coronavirus deal on Capitol Hill, the Trump administration is trying to take executive actions to help out Americans who have been negatively impacted by coronavirus. So one of the ideas is this payroll tax, tax holiday, or it's a temporary thing where employers could choose to defer paying payroll taxes. That's money that goes into the Social Security program so that workers or their workers would have more money in 2020. However, they would have to pay a greater or have greater taxes withheld in 2021. So it's really a deferred tax payment program. It seems that few employers are choosing to participate. It's really unclear at this point how many are going to go down this path. A lot of people see it as too risky. And so it's unclear at this point what type of impact this is really having for American workers.
Well, we also heard that there's now going to be a nationwide ban on evictions coming into effect. That's through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC.
Yeah, it's an interesting creative move. The CDC, another sort of executive action from the president through the CDC, is going to make it illegal or has made it illegal now to evict somebody who's been negatively impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. This could cover millions of Americans who, as we know, have been struggling to pay their rent because of lost wages or losing their job. You know, there are certain requirements. You have to make less than $99,000 a year, or as a couple, $198,000 a year in 2020. But this is not, again, this is not rent forgiveness, as we've heard from some liberals calling for rent forgiveness or the cancellation of rent. The rent is still owed to the landlord on the back end. And so eventually this money will all have to be paid back. And so you have housing advocates saying, you know, watch out for that cliff. This really sets up renters for failure when this moratorium ends at the end of the year. Mm.
We're talking with Scott Wong, who's a senior staff writer at The Hill, and we're getting the latest on the week in Washington, which also is the week in Wisconsin, as we've seen so much happening in Kenosha, from the president visiting to also Joe Biden planning a trip tomorrow. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234, wondering what you think about the situation, how you see politicians handling Wisconsin. Do you feel like they're here to help, or do you think they're making the situation worse? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Scott, President Trump visited yesterday, greeted by a mix of supporters and protesters along his motorcade's path when he went from Waukegan's airport to Kenosha. What stood out to you from Trump's meetings or tours of the damaged areas or public statements?
Well, he really wants to hammer home this message that he is supportive of law enforcement, that he is the law and order guy. And, you know, standing in front of the burned out building, he's sending a message to voters in swing states like Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan that, you know, I'm the guy that's going to be here to protect you from these radicals that are setting fire to businesses and causing violence in some cities around the country. But, you know, Joe Biden has been much more aggressive in recent days, speaking in Pittsburgh, and then tomorrow he'll be in your state, in Kenosha, pushing back on that narrative in a much more aggressive way, saying that the president is actually the one fanning the flames of the violence, that he is the reason that we're seeing chaos across the country. And Biden is really pointing to himself as saying, I'm the guy that can bring calm to the situation, not Donald Trump. And so you surely are seeing the battle lines being drawn in this election as we head into this home stretch after the two Democratic and Republican conventions.
We've got Charlie in Milwaukee ready to join our conversation. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. With that in mind, I was wondering if your guest could tell us, since he is a reporter for The Hill, which is probably one of the most neutral and one of the best news sites still on the internet, I'd like to have him comment on what he sees with the mainstream media for what they are talking about and causing all the violence that's going on. A couple weeks ago on CNN, they had this was a fiery but peaceful protest, and they said they downplayed the violence. Now that that's turning politically favorable for Trump, they're now saying that Trump is the cause of it, which makes me think that the mainstream media can't be truthful about anything. They couldn't be truthful about Brennan.
Yeah, let me hop in here, Charlie, because I just want to make sure that our guest has a chance to respond, because Scott, Charlie's saying, how are we supposed to trust everybody trying to cover this? And what I hear in that is that we have a lot of different narratives going here.
Yeah, and that's always going to be the case in a presidential campaign. It's about who controls the narrative, who is getting their message out. And one way that certainly Joe Biden is able to get his message out and to continue to pump out campaign ads is he had an enormous fundraising haul of more than $350 million in the month of August. I think that was a record-setting haul. And so you're going to see Biden just continue to flood the airwaves in your state and in swing states around the country. And, you know, he's out fundraising President Trump. I think you can say that probably points to where some of the enthusiasm is in the country, people more willing to open up their wallets. The other point I would make just about, you know, the bias of the news industry. I mean, the two campaigns today released, or the Presidential Debate Commission, which is a bipartisan commission represented by both campaigns, released the moderators of the debates. And so this is the next phase of the campaign. Is now we're heading into the debate season. There will be three debates. They've agreed on moderators. And so you will see now the two messages going head on with each other, the two candidates going face to face with some pretty well-respected moderators, including C-SPAN's Steve Scully, who I know very well, as well as Kristen Welker from NBC and Chris Wallace from Fox News. And so there is some common agreement between the campaigns and in these moderators, and it'll be interesting to tune into these debates in the coming weeks.
We're talking with Scott Wong from The Hill. It is the week in Washington, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. How would you like to see our political leaders handle what's happening in Kenosha, whether it's on police reform or racial injustice? How do you see them changing the way that they're campaigning for president based on what's happening in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. You're part of the conversation we're having here on Central Time. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina, and we're talking with Scott Wong. He's a senior staff writer at The Hill, and we are talking about some of the week's top national political stories, and they come from Wisconsin. Thanks for giving us a call at 800-642-1234. We've got Mo in Oconto, who has a point he wants to make. Hi, Mo.
Hello. My thoughts are this. Who's the president now and what's going on? Kellyanne Conway has stated that this violence and unruliness behavior is benefiting the president, so why would he stop it? And if he's the only one that could stop it, he sure doesn't seem like he's that eager to do that. Thank you.
Mo, thanks for that comment then. And Scott, that's some criticism we're seeing of the president's visit, that people think that he's not necessarily there to try to create peace.
Well, as you probably have reported, there were a number of Democratic leaders in your state who asked the president not to come because they feared that he would fan the flames of a very tense situation in which lives have been lost. And, you know, it's also a message that you've heard from Joe Biden himself, saying that President Trump is encouraging violence or wants to see violence or is cheering on the violence because he believes it will help him in this election. You know, the reason why I think we saw the president go to Wisconsin yesterday and Joe Biden coming tomorrow is because, you know, there are crucial voters in your state, particularly in the suburbs. And that's, you know, one of the groups that both sides are targeting here. Is this fight for suburban, educated, college-educated voters. President Trump knows he needs to make gain ground after losing a lot of those voters in the 2018 election. I think the campaign believes, if you've watched their ads and listened to their rhetoric, they believe that this sort of message of fear and that the radicals are coming, led by Joe Biden, is a message that could drive some of those voters, white college-educated voters, back to the Trump side. But you're hearing Joe Biden, you know, really push back, saying, you know me. He's trying to appeal to those same voters, saying, you know me. Do I look like one of those radicals? And then secondly, he's also denounced the violence yesterday, denounced the looters and the arsons, and saying those people should be prosecuted. Suburban voters are going to be a big part of the narrative in these coming months.
Babette in Milwaukee has something to contribute here as we are talking about this. Hi, Babette.
Hi. I did, even though I've been a protester, peaceful protester, at past things in Kenosha and Milwaukee, I did not go to the Trump anti-Trump protest yesterday because I did not want to be a part of his next election ad, because I think that's what he was there to do. At the same time, I am very opposed to the violence from the protesters when they become rioters and when they burn down buildings and when they beat up one store owner who had his jaw broken and such. That I'm very opposed to, and it's hard to get through to some of those other protesters because I've argued with them. So I'm glad to hear that Biden is coming and that he has in the past condemned the violence. I hope he will do so again. And I think that the violence on the part of the militias also needs to be condemned.
Babette, thank you so much for that call. And Scott, what are you hearing? Because we did hear the president yesterday say, we're going to spend money here. We're going to send money here to help businesses rebuild. Are both political candidates for president using the damage to their advantage also?
I'm not sure about that. And I haven't followed exactly how much money in funding will be sent to Kenosha or to Wisconsin. You know, one thing that struck me this week was to see Joe Biden get out in Pittsburgh. Today he was in Delaware, his home state, and tomorrow he's going to be in Kenosha. And that suggests to me that he is listening to some of the criticism in his own party, the hand-wringing from Democrats saying, you can't stay hunkered down in your basement. You got to get out and show people that you're listening to them, that you're in the places where these events are happening, that you have a connection to some of these events that are happening nationwide. And so I think it's significant that, you know, Biden and President Trump is forcing Biden to do that by touring all of these swing states from very early on. Today, President Trump was in North Carolina. So I think you're going to start to see this campaign, despite the coronavirus crisis, really start to resemble more and more a traditional campaign, not necessarily with the full campaign staffs and the cheering crowds, but the candidates are now out of their bubbles and will be crisscrossing the country in the coming months.
Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill covering House of Representatives leadership, and we're talking to Scott for this week's Week in Washington recap. Another story we are following is over the weekend, we learned that the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, would be halting in-person congressional briefings on matters of election security and interference. What's this about?
Yeah, John Ratcliffe is a staunch ally of President Trump. He was a member of the House of Representatives has been very close to the president during his time in the House. And earlier this year was made Director of National Intelligence, overseeing all of the intelligence community from the White House. And he says he informed Congress this week, there will no longer be in-person election security briefings for lawmakers. He said he's concerned about unauthorized leaks of classified information that Democrats could run to the media with stories that they learn from these briefings. He says there will be written briefings, however, but lawmakers, you know, will be restricted now from being able to ask questions in real time on these important national security measures. And I think it's just another example of the political polarization of now intelligence issues. And it comes at a time, as we know, when Russia and China are looking for ways to impact the presidential election. Democrats don't have much recourse. They're threatening to block off funding for the DNI. But, you know, with the election 60 some odd days away, I think their hands are really tied and not much will be done before the election.
So lawmakers can't ask questions. What do we as the general public lose with not having these in-person briefings?
Well, a lot of these briefings are classified in nature, which means that most of the information is not being shared with the public. But, you know, Congress has an oversight responsibility. And so part of that responsibility is to get information from the executive branch, including the Director of National Intelligence. And so, you know, a lot of that information now probably will be restricted in some ways, you know, instead of back and forths exchanged behind closed doors in meetings between lawmakers and the DNI, they'll have to write written responses back and forth. And as you know, those take time and can get really bogged down. So there's a time delay that, you know, and we don't know what's going to happen in the next 60 days, but, you know, time is often of the essence. And in this case, those delays could be significant.
Yeah. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. Thank you.
Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill, where he covers the House of Representatives leadership. And we have been talking with him about some of this week's top national political stories, including some opposing messages related to Kenosha here in Wisconsin.